Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The following big interview was posted in full for our socios, our members, our friends, our supporters at patreon.com/GrahamHunter. And that was last season, 2019-20. Sign up there and you'll get every interview we produce before it's released on the main feed, plus the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. You'll also get bonus content every month, including the audio versions of my regular columns for ESPN. And what's more, you'll be supporting us. You'll be keeping this independent podcast on the road. Thank you. Hello friends and newcomers, this is The Big Interview with Alex Bruce. Alex and I met not too far from Kilmarnock. We spoke about making it all the way to an FA Cup final, which is kind of a loop in the story, given that our story does begin at the FA Cup final, watching his father, Steve, pick up the cup. Alex tells us that he's long made peace with being known as Steve Bruce's son. And I wanted to talk not just about his dad, but about growing up as the son of the Manchester United captain, watching the beginning of that Alex Ferguson era and imagining that one day, hey, that could be me at Wembley. And it was. Thank you to Alex, a most interesting guest, for taking part in the big interview. I know you'll enjoy this. And there'll be more soon. Stay tuned. The big interview's careering journey around Europe continues to certainly... Hello, Alex Bruce.
Hello.
Certainly one of the most glamorous and exotic locations that we've ever been. Right now, meteorologically, the instant I've started speaking, it's changed. But there was kind of, what would you call it, Alex? A curtain of grey rain blocking our entire visage.
Yes.
As we look out this. This is like Mission Control, isn't it?
We've got a little bit of everything going on here, haven't we?
It's like you in the pitch. We've got absolute 2020 vision. Except for...
I don't know about that.
I suppose this is a way to say, what the bloody hell are you doing in Scotland? And how quickly do you want to get out? Nothing to do with the club, but boy oh boy, for a Scot who's been out of his country since about 96, you come back and you're like... Is it actually feasible that it's this grey and there's this much rain?
It is very grey. There's a lot of rain. I was up at 5:30 this morning driving back. I've had a few days off, so I've been to see my family. And driving back from Manchester this morning
with your heart bursting with joy returning to this weather, right?
There was a few questions going on in my mind, I have to be honest.
It's nice to start with honesty. Well, on the basis of a few questions going on in your mind, if I gave you sort of 64 times 8 as a question right now, would you A, reach for a calculator, B, have the answer in your head, or would you need to phone Ryan Giggs?
You picked up on that one then. No, it was. I'd definitely be picking my phone out. It's very, very close to me here, so I'd be getting that out.
You're just the only person I've ever met who's taught mathematics by Ryan Giggs, and I really think that's quite groovy.
Yeah. Do you know something? It was totally... I just remember being a kid and him being round the corner somewhere. I think he was at Paul Ince's house, and he popped in to see my dad for something. And like most kids sometimes doing the homework with the father, we were scratching our heads. My mum and dad went to them for help. And Ryan was there and he helped me out.
How I mean, I'm not looking at to the decimal point. How good is he?
As a player or at maths?
Well, as a personal tutor at maths.
It's just a little bit of an odd picture.
Yeah.
How did you concentrate?
To be honest, it was that long ago. It must have been only something very basic. But
well, let's say he was brilliant then.
Yeah. He must have been. Yeah, he must have been. He was better than my dad anyway, that's for sure.
Ryan Giggs, trigonometry expert. Fantastic.
Yeah.
I suppose it's a sort of jocular way of introducing the idea, but to what extent, given that you were born with talent, and you've done what all of us would have loved to have done, spent a life playing football, earning a living playing football,
yeah,
highs and lows, but a lot of experience at Wembley, couple of playoff wins, a brutal disappointment in losing an FA Cup final, but let's get to it, you played in an FA Cup final, played internationally. To what extent is that life of immersion with footballers around you all the time and a football, the idiosyncratic demands of a football life around you all the time, a preparation for what then becomes an entirely different version of the footballer? Because rather than being as part of a big family, one of the things about football life is you're on your own.
Yeah, yeah.
So what kind of preparation is it when you've got what you had for what comes next?
It gives you a little insight because you've always got someone there who has been there and done it. So you've firsthand, I had someone who I could go to and ask for advice. But nothing prepares you until you're thrown into the deep end of being a professional. There's nothing. I had an old steely coach called Bobby Downs, who'd very experienced youth team manager at Blackburn. And I remember him saying, I left school at 16 and we went into a room. And he said, congratulations, lads. Look round the room. He says, one of us will probably make it in here. And I remember looking around thinking, there's 20 of us in here. And he's a good player. He's a good player. He's better than me. And I remember thinking, wow, this is going to be tough. And it has been. It's any professional who's had an experience in playing the game, it's full of ups and downs. If I was going to give any advice to anybody going in to have a career in professional football, that's what the one thing I would say. Prepare yourself, because the emotions can change from week to week. You can be riding high one week, next week you can get injured, there can be a disappointment around the corner. So mentally, you've got to be prepared to go into it because it's challenging.
I've always felt that it can be quite a pitiless existence, because I think everybody is taught not only just to look after themselves, but to try and push other people down, whether you're talking within a dressing room, or a manager who might need you but not like you, or an owner who doesn't want, you know all the strata of it. Yet we all stay hopelessly in love with it, which is the,
Well, that's the beauty of football, isn't it? We all keep going back for more. And like what you say, there's nothing prepared. I mean, I was looking at Jordan Jones, for example, who was at Kilmarnock with myself last year. He set up a goal in Europe last week, came on and did really well. Came on again in the Old Firm, was doing well. And within a blink of an eye, he goes into a stupid tackle, gets sent off. Hurts himself, out for a couple of months. That's what football's like. I spoke to him the other day and I said, you've just got to learn from it, because that's what football is, and that's a perfect example of what it can be like. There's no industry like it, really. It is dog eat dog, like you say. And that never changes when you're 18, 19 to, like I am now, 34, 35. You've got to look after yourself. You have to have a determination, a steely determination to succeed. And that never changes.
What I was joking about was this brilliant piece that we'll come back and touch on a little bit, because it said a lot of interesting things.
Yeah.
But this brilliant piece for Unscripted, which I suppose was for the club, for Manchester United.
Yeah.
It did what a lot of us, it talked about what a lot of us dream about. Like, so, for example, you go down to Wembley as a United fan then. I don't know if you are or you aren't now. Maybe one of the United. And you see your dad lifting the cup. You see your dad winning something at Wembley. That must inject in it, because all of us who love this sport, we all get born with the idea that maybe the glory could happen to us. And even, at 56, you go to sleep at night dreaming of scoring that goal. When it's all gone and it was never really there, you still do. And I wonder to what extent you've been able to keep alive the beauty of it, the romanticism of it, when football buffets you all the time, particularly people.
Well, I look back at my childhood and I think of things like what you're saying there, going to FA Cup finals and seeing things, going to training with my dad on a Sunday and being around what people would see as so-called super. To me, it was the norm. They were just my dad's workmates, my dad's work colleagues. Going down to Wembley with my mum, with all the players' wives and families, and then coming back on the train with the with the FA Cup or whatever trophy that they've won. These are memories that I have that I'll cherish forever. But the one thing that it did give me was a determination to think, oh, I hope I can do this when I'm older. I could see the success that my dad was having and the quality of life it gave me, us as a family, us as a, around us. As like, obviously, you live in a nice house, you go on nice holidays. And I always looked up to him and thought, I hope one day I can provide that for my family by doing what dad's done. So I knew I had to work hard and make sacrifices to do that.
So that might have been a conscious thought even before you knew you were particularly good.
Yeah, yeah, it was. I mean, this was from when I was very young.
Yeah,
I'd go away and see things, and as a child growing up, you go to. I mean, like we said, when I played in the FA Cup final, I still remember going to the 1990 Cup final when Man United played Crystal Palace very clearly, and I'd probably been 6-7 years of age, and I remember thinking, God, I hope to God I can walk out at Wembley and the Twin Towers as it was back then. And fortunate for me, it happened.
Can you remember the day much? Crystal Palace, first of all. No, because your one is just about as dramatic.
Yeah, it was,
and
yeah.
Heartbreaking. For lovers of underdogs.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's be frank, it's Arsenal.
It was, yeah. I can remember the white kit, and I can remember the first tie, because it went to a replay a couple of nights later. I remember Lee Martin scored the... I didn't go to that because it was a school night, but the first one was the weekend.
The first one we like to call, Aberdeen fans like to call, the Jim Leighton game.
The Jim Leighton game, that's correct, yeah. I can remember it. I can't remember the score off the top of my head, but I remember it being a high-scoring game. I remember Ian Wright coming on as a sub, I think, in that game and scored. Wright and Bright were up front. There were some good players on view. I think Brian Robson scored. And I was just starting to, as a young lad, just starting to get a feel for like football and what it was all about and having my heroes. And it was just a fantastic experience to go to and a spectacle. And like any kid, when you go to a spectacle like that, an arena like that, gives you a taste of something that you want to try and follow your dream of becoming and doing something yourself.
So I suppose when, you know, you go back yourself, that's not really in your mind all that much because
No.
You're a top pro. Mm-hmm. You've got huge experience. But did you inherit this beyond, I went there when I was young, my dad won this, did the magic of the cup, which people talk a lot about now being a little bit sullied because the top four in the Premier League, did the magic of the cup always infect you?
I don't know if I'm speaking for myself here, because I look back at instances like what I've said where I went to watch my dad play in FA Cup finals, and I had that thought in my head, I would love to get there one day myself. So for me, playing in the FA Cup final was without a shadow of a doubt the biggest day of my career. It was something that I think back of what the experience was like walking out, the anthems and I remember Alexandra Burke played singing the song before the game, and I just remember standing there thinking, this is just the pinnacle. Like, hairs on the back of your neck were up. And
what are you like in a situation like that? Are you bottled up tension? Are you completely relaxed and ready for the battle? You've already noted more things than a lot of players who I speak to who are like, no, the actual day passed me by because it was all about the game. And
no, that was one thing I wanted to do, because I haven't been a top player. I haven't been like a Roy Keane or my dad or a Brian Robson or a Gerrard or who play in them every year. I knew Hull City getting to an FA Cup final was, we were the underdogs. We were lucky to get there. We had quite an easy run getting to the final, but we did have a couple of games. The quarter semi-final were quite difficult, if I can remember rightly, but to get to the FA Cup final, I knew it was probably going to be a one-off to play on a stage like that. So I wanted to try and grab it with both hands and enjoy the day. I remember waking up in the morning and walking around the golf course at the Grove Hotel. The helicopters were going round, just TV, and I remember thinking, it's a big day, this.
Butterflies.
I was nervous, very nervous. But on the bus driving up to Wembley, and one of them life experiences where you look back and you think, this is just all the hard work, all the disappointments, everything that you grow up to try and achieve something in your life as a footballer. It was one of those days where I felt as if like, this is what you play football for, and it was a great day. The only thing that put a sour note on it was obviously the results.
You mentioned, I mean, from my notes, are you somebody who liked having played the semi-final at Wembley? Because I think you beat...
We beat Sheffield United.
Something like a derby when it's Sheffield United.
Yeah.
In a really dull, low-scoring 8-goal thriller.
Yeah.
Which you watched from the bench.
I was on the bench that game.
What the hell?
I know. Cheers, Dad. I remember having the ump with him as well because he left me out. No, he changed the form. We that season we played a lot 3-5-2 against the teams where we're the underdogs, really. We made ourselves a bit more solid defensively. But in certain games where he felt as if we could go and get after teams, he changed to a 4-3-3. And we played 4-3-3 that day in the semi-final against Sheffield United. And it worked for us because it was a high-scoring game and it was a tough game, if I remember rightly. The first day where Dad noticed a certain Harry Maguire. Remember him coming off purring about Harry that day. And then we went back to a three, obviously playing against Arsenal in the final was a different kind of game. We went into it with different tactics and a formation, so fortunately I got the nod to play.
And then, so you're talking about the bottled up tension and adrenaline and whatever, and you know, you're on the bus. Are you one who's reaching out to other players you can see are suffering? Was it just bonhomie and lads out together, we've got nothing to lose here?
It was a little bit like that. I think it was more of a case of, come on lads, this is what you work hard all your life for, let's go and have a good go at it. And I think you could tell by the opening stages of the game, we came out really strong and went two goals up.
You're 2-0 up in 8 minutes.
Yeah, that tells its own story. Probably went ahead, looking back now, in the game too quick, really.
Why do people say that? Do you believe that now, retrospectively? I know the math says that they went and scored three goals, one of them in extra time.
Yeah, I remember being 2-0 up and looking at the clock and remember it clearly, thinking, Christ almighty, we've got 82 minutes to hold on. When you go 2-0 up in a game, you think, in my mind, I was thinking, geez, we're going to win here. Yeah. I remember thinking that. And I remember going up for a corner and having a header cleared off the line by Kieran Gibbs.
For three.
I think about it probably every day. I think, what if that dropped over the goalkeeper and went into the bottom corner?
But your connection was good.
It was a great clearance off the line. I remember thinking, if only that had went in, but they got a goal. I give the free kick away, actually. Alan McGregor should have saved it, though. So I'm not taking all the responsibility. it was 2-1 at half-time. And it was...
But, I mean, okay. And then the guy who pops that away, Cazorla's a magician. Yeah, he's still, you know, running games with half a leg at Villarreal when he shouldn't really be walking. He's just a magician. So I accept that you're playing against magical footballer.
Yeah, and then we conceded towards the end of the game. Made it 2-2, took to extra time. And then we conceded in the second half of extra time, I think it was, when Ramsey stuck it in.
Ramsey.
So it was a disappointment in the end, but when I look back on it, it was without a shadow of a doubt, the whole spectacle of it, the FA Cup. I remember Steve Harper saying to me after we won the semi-final, just look forward to the final, lads, because he'd played a couple of Newcastle, because that's the finals like what we've just experienced there, but on steroids. And that was the best way anyone could have described the day. The FA Cup final, everything about it was just amazing.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Maybe it's a chance to talk through one or two of the participants that helped get you there, because you've said really impressive things about Tom Huddleston in the past, about his ability.
Fantastic ability.
Try and paint a picture of that guy that goes beyond what he does with a ball, because he's something of an anomaly. Anybody who appreciates football can see that, although he maybe wasn't the fastest athletically, he was one of these players who had more... You can't even work out how somebody creates a bubble of time and space around them.
Always had time and space. I remember whenever I played with Tom, he was one of them players where is he? Get Tom the ball, because he'll just calm everything down. Both foot, equally as good with his left as he is with his right. Could strike a ball as clean as anyone you could ever see. Just had a natural talent, made everything look easy. And I think the players who do that with a football are the gifted ones, you know, who can make everything look so simple. And he was just one of them players. as you say, mobility wise, that was probably the one thing that stopped him going on to be
elite.
Elite, yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. If he had the mobility of a Vieira or a someone like that who could get up and down the pitch, then there's absolutely no doubt in my mind Tom Huddleston would have been as good as you get in terms of it, because of his natural ability on
is
the
that
ball.
One of life's cruel practical jokes was, could he have been given more physical athleticism, or could he have,
that's just
looked
the,
for it more?
The hand that you dealt. I mean, you've either got it or you haven't. I mean, he wasn't built in a way to be as mobile as other people, but by God, what he lacked in mobility, he had in.
So if he lived in the 60s or the 70s, when, you know, it wasn't all about athletic ability, it was all about talent.
Yeah.
Then he'd have looked more in his era.
He would have, yeah. Tom's one of them players. He was that good technically. Wise, he was such a good technician. He would have played in any era and had a good career, as he's had. But yeah, maybe in the 60s and 70s, you'd have probably suited him a bit more.
What kind of character?
Very laid back. One of them where he sits in the corner and you don't quite know what he's thinking. But a good lad. We had a really good dressing room, actually. I've often spoke about playing for my dad. Obviously, being the manager's son, it can be difficult in no matter what line of work that you're in. But that dressing room was great at handling that situation of me being in there. We had some good characters and really good set of lads.
So that is an issue. If you've got ability, it really shouldn't matter if the manager's your dad or not.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
You found, well, you talked about people kicking you, or being told to kick you, or looking forward to kick you, just because you're Steve Bruce's son.
Yeah, that was when I was young, yeah. Listen.
You come to terms with that pretty quickly, or you don't survive, right?
Of course you do. I mean, it gave me an insight from early doors where, like what I touched the base on before, it's difficult to be a footballer. And when I was a kid, I remember playing in games where young lads, 10, 11-year-old, would come up to me and say, Steve Bruce's son, I'm going to kick shite out of you today. I've been told by my dad on the touchline he's a Liverpool fan or a City fan. And I'd be like, all right, OK. And 9 times out of 10, it would happen, you know. So it toughened me up. It was a good learning curve for me.
Can you remember dealing with that at 11 or 12? And what you, how you reacted? Because that goes beyond football. If somebody's out to get you in life,
yeah,
we all react differently. And
Can I be honest, Graham? I was very good when I was 11. Dad will tell you himself. I was a striker, and I scored all the goals for my county, my district, and I had a couple of years. And Dad would tell you himself, he'd come and watch, and I'd score. We'd play Liverpool boys, for example, for my district, Stockport boys, and we'd go and score. I'd score 4. We'd win 4-0. And then the following week, we'd go to St Helens and we'd win 2-0, I'd score 2. And this happened every week. And I think I knew I had ability. Mm-hmm. But then when I got to 14, I don't know what happened to me, but I went from being pretty much top of the tree of my age group to near enough the bottom. I didn't grow. I lost my balance. I was absolutely useless, low on confidence. Got released from Man United at 16. And it was tough, really tough. I got a lifeline and went to Blackburn at 16, and I got my strength, left home, moved into Diggs, moved into a lodge with 25 lads in Blackburn on the Blackburn training ground. Mm-hmm. I left a boy and was a man within a couple of weeks of living with all the lads, and that was a different experience.
Fending for yourself.
Fending for myself. And I just got my confidence back, and whether it was a change of scenery, moving home, whatever it was, I got my confidence and gained a little bit of strength, and I got back a little bit of what I felt I had at 11, 12-year-old. I don't know if it was a growth spurt or what it was.
You really, retrospectively, haven't come to a conclusion about what it was?
I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was growing or... I just went... my family will tell you, it was bizarre. You went from being... My dad would say, I remember thinking, God, I've got a superstar on my hands here at 11, 12... And then at 14, 15, he was saying, oh, Christ, what the hell's happened to him? You know, it was one of them, but...
That tests your mettle.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah. I don't know whether it was mental or it was physical growing or... I don't know what it was, really.
And can you sketch in the darker areas then about Blackburn? Simply, never mind Steve Bruce. No mum and dad? Or...
I was on my own. That was the biggest. Yeah. When I went to Blackburn and I was in Diggs, it was, you're on your own now, and I was with a couple of tough fellas, Bobby Downs, Robert Kelly, really good youth team coaches, were very successful at Blackburn at the time. They were often getting to the FA Youth Cup finals and winning leagues at that under-17s, under-19s.
Who's the senior manager this time?
Graham Souness was our manager. But we didn't really have a lot to do with Graham because we were in the academy and there were two separate buildings.
This is at the time when he's winning the League Cup against Spurs.
That was it, round about then. Yeah. I remember going to that game.
Yeah, Matt Janssen would have been playing in that game. In
Matt Janssen was there, he was a first team player.
Yeah.
Very good player before his accident, unfortunately.
His bike crash.
I couldn't have wished for a better education in what it took to be a professional footballer. I went from Man United where it was all technical and academy football where you go in a couple of nights a week after school to work on your skills, and I went from that to leaving school and all of a sudden it was a results driven industry where it was we need to win and we were playing for our livelihoods really rather than just enjoying it, and it put a steely determination in myself. I remember we didn't have as technically gifted squad, youth team squad, as probably some of the clubs around at the time, but we had a group of lads who, because I don't know if it's because we lived together or what, but we had a real good team spirit, and what we lacked for in natural ability we made up for in determination and hard work, and we went on and won the league, the FA Premier League under 19 level. We got to FA Youth Cup finals, so it was a really good, enjoyable
period in those, in
period
in those
of my
days
life.
Must have felt as gigantic.
It was great.
An achievement as winning against Arsenal would have done.
Well, we went to Aston Villa and we played Villa in the FA Premier League under 19s. And we played at Ewood Park, the home leg, and then Villa Park in the away leg. And Villa had some really good players. Liam Ridgewell, Steve Davis, Gary Cahill, the Moore brothers.
I remember there's so much expected of them.
Peter Whittingham. They had a really, really good team. I'd say probably 8 out of the starting 11 went on to have really good careers.
Which is a big percentage.
My team, we had myself, Paul Gallagher, Jay McEvely, Ian Black, who had a little spell up in Scotland. It was about 4 or 5 who made a career for themselves. Nowhere near like the career that... But I think we beat them 5-2, 5-3 over the two legs. And we won the Premier League. So it was a time that I look back on in my life that was fantastic. And I remember after the game, I signed my first professional contract at Blackburn. I signed a new 3-year deal. And that was when I started feeling like I was... Over the difficult period of between 14 and 16.
It's a hell of a test for any human being. I think to feel, I can do this, now I can't.
Yeah.
What's the cause? What do I do? How do I react?
Didn't know what it was.
Other people fold.
Mm. Yeah, maybe it was. Maybe I had a determination to think, I'll... Do you know what I think it was, Graham? I think it was getting released from Man United. That put something in me where I thought, I'm going to prove them wrong. Maybe because Dad had been there and I'd been brought up with a place, I might have been on Easy Street, and no matter what level of or age group you're at, if you're ever on Easy Street as a footballer,
you think you're just
going to coast along. Probably looking back, maybe. Probably just thought, ah, Dad's the captain, I know everyone, I know all the coaches, mm-hmm. I know the place like the back of my hand, I know everyone involved with the place. I just took it in my stride, I took it for granted, I probably just felt I would coast along and eventually get in the reserves and the first team. And it doesn't work like that.
This is not an easy one for you, but I know that United now, we were there a couple of years ago filming, courtesy of Quentin Fortune. We went in and we went to, you trained at Cliff,
didn't
you? Maybe you had time at Carrington, I don't know, but you've seen Carrington, you know what it's like.
I got released at Carrington, it was just being built at the
sorry
time.
About that.
Yeah, I can't remember getting called Carrington. To Carrington, didn't hold a very good memory. Yeah, but I did my education.
You can see the difference automatically. It's I'm not calling the Cliff rough and ready, but there's a big difference
in what's been invested.
It feels quite Rolls Royce when you go there. And one of the things that I've often talked about was that Quentin and the coaches, one coach who'd been there since George Best was a kid, said to us, come and watch the cage. Now, the cage is not small, but it's a cage where they've introduced the idea that it'll be non-stop football, ball off the roof, ball off the walls, with an idea about getting the kids out of their comfort zone into the idea of street football.
Yeah.
Where it's a little bit rough and ready and where they want the minimum intervention from, there's not an actual ref, there's a coach going, I'll blow that, I won't blow that. And I saw on that day, it just happened to be Mason Greenwood.
Yeah.
Get a dig from somebody, 5 minutes later, dribble past them and punch them in the same movement. Mm. They were like, oh, do we send him off? Don't we send him off? Oh, that's what we want to see, but okay, red card for a swing of the fist and blah, blah, blah. You know, can you understand, or at your stage, should there have been more putting maybe kids like you with talent out of their comfort zone? Was it all on you that you assumed a little bit about this will go fine because my career path is meant to be this
way? Yeah.
Or were they already lacking a little bit of that, let's dig the boys out?
I think there was an element of digging the boys out because I worked with Eric Harrison.
The legendary.
The best. I mean, he took us some training sessions. He wasn't our actual main coach, but he would take the odd session. So no matter what session Eric took, you knew you had a proper session. And if you were coasting along, then you would get a rocket up the backside.
Can you give us a sense of it? Can you break one of his sessions down?
I remember doing a session of his. I remember being about 14 in the old cliff on a Tuesday night, hard AstroTurf pitch. He says, right, lads, we're doing the 1-6, my famous run. Anyone will know, whoever's worked with me, you'll know what my 1-6 is. And I remember thinking, 1-6, what's this going to be? And it was basically run one pitch length, jog, run two, jog one, run three, jog one. I remember being in the corner of the cliff, spewing my guts up about 8:30 on a Tuesday night. Absolutely, like, experienced something I'd never experienced before, thinking, what the hell is this? And that was Eric, you know, he put a work ethic into you. That football's hard work, you know what I mean? And that's one thing I remember from Eric, that his sessions
once you've
were
run
tough.
Because that, you started your session with the 1-6.
That was towards it. You'd always do a running session at the end. You'd have your football. You'd have your football work. And it was as if, I look back now, it was probably Eric's way of, you do the technical stuff and you'd have your little games and your little dribbling neck drills and all the rest of it.
But don't
and
then walk off like a cop because my touch is good.
Yeah, I'm done now. I'm going to go and get in my car and drive home. Right, lads, one more last little thing. I'm going to put a little run on for you at the end. And I think it was just Eric's way of making you know what it took to become a professional footballer.
And I never met him, but his name comes up particularly from, you know, the most famous of probably your era was the crew that came through together.
They were a little bit older than me.
Yeah.
But I was fortunate enough, obviously, to get to know quite a few.
You saw their progression when they were at the age you're talking about you were at now.
Yes, and Eric worked with them all the time. He was their coach.
They speak about him in reverential.
He was a father figure to them all. And I think Eric realised as well that he had a special group there. I mean, there's not many groups of youth team players who come through and have the careers that the Giggsy and David, and the Neville brothers and Scholesy and all these people had. They were a special group. And I remember going to watch them in FA Youth Cup runs and stuff when I was a really young kid at United. Dad used to take me along and they were really destined to be top players.
That when you were watching them, so you're watching them maybe about 12, 13 years old yourself?
Yeah, maybe a little bit younger than that, 92, 93. I was a little bit of, yeah, I've been about 9, 10, 11 year old.
And you could see then that they stood out?
Yeah, I remember going to watch them in an FA Youth Cup final. I think they played Crystal Palace and all of them were playing. And I remember Nicky Butt did a scissor kick edge of the 18-yard box. And as a 10-year-old, I remember thinking, wow, what was that? Like, it was amazing. And obviously the technical ability that David Beckham had and all these young players, it was a good learning curve watching these young lads come through, you know.
When you listen to them and they've become a little cottage industry of their own, mm-hmm. because they're all pretty strong characters. Well, and
they've all done all right afterwards. For themselves, haven't they?
I'd say that's a reasonable phrase, yeah.
Yeah.
I do hope you enjoyed that big interview, which was first released as an exclusive to our socios, our members who support us. If you'd like to get these interviews on the first day they're available, it's time for you to join us. To become a socio, and for only £2.99 per month, you'll get all our content entirely ad-free and ahead of its release on the main feed. Please go to patreon.com/GrahamHunter to unlock our entire archive. By joining us, you will help support this independent podcast and we'll blow virtual kisses towards you. Thank you.